Welcome to Manager Tools. Role Power Revisited, You Speak for the CEO, Part 2. This cast answers these questions. How much role power do I have? Should I use my role power? Are there limits to my role power? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, this cast is about organizations and role power, but remember, it's directed at you, the manager. The heart of our business is helping you, the individual manager, be more effective and more efficient by teaching you what you need to know and helping you grow your organization. The best way for you as an individual to start the process beyond just listening is to become a licensee of our work. Now, in addition to the cast, listen to the cast, and sometimes you'll have to listen to me when I'm sick, you can simply download the show notes, which are available only to licensees, and read the cast. This is especially important when you come across a topic you need to revisit, but you don't want to have to skim through the cast and 40 or 45 minutes of me droning on when you can just read 4 or 5 or 6 pages of specific and detailed show notes that cover all of the content in the cast itself. We look forward to you becoming a licensee and developing a better relationship with you.
All right, Mark. So last time we talked about the fundamental principle of what role power means to you as a manager, and that is that you speak for the CEO, and that's driven by the vertical nature of the vast majority of modern organizations today. So once you understand that, the next question is, well, what does that mean in practice?
Yeah, and we're going to use a couple of examples to share this here, and it highlights the fact that most managers don't know this derivation, this fundamental principle, causes them to devalue themselves as individual managers. So let's talk about some examples. Your CEO of your company decides, or perhaps supports a recommendation for, which is the same thing, that the company is going to start using a new enterprise-wide resource planning and accounting system. If you're wondering what that means, think Oracle or SAP or Salesforce coming into your company. The decision is made at the top, and planning and implementation begin. Gradually, guidance about what that means for each department is worked out at successively lower levels until it finally gets to you. You're given guidance on what systems and processes and reporting and job requirements will change for your team. You communicate that to your team. It's your job, and you understand it. The company's changing the way it does business internally, and they believe it'll be more efficient and more effective. Ideally, you follow our guidance regarding those changes, and you explain the specific effects of what's happening to your directs. In other words, you don't just forward the communications you get or let some trainer that you don't know come in and talk to your team directly without working them in advance. You interpret and apply it specifically to each role and responsibility on your team. The phrase you ideally have in your mind is, whenever somebody talks to your team, and often, most often that will be you, all the changes that are happening at the top and cascading through the organization are accompanied with your idea of, this is what this means for us, guys. Okay. Yes, these are the 5 changes, and there are 2 of these modules that are critically important for us, and I'm going to show you exactly how to use them. Now, that happens in organizations. I'm sure many of you listening have experienced this. No one in a large organization hears this and thinks, I'm not doing this. No reasonable person, okay? You obviously know, as a manager particularly, and now if you know about your role as speaking for the CEO, you have no ability to opt out of this organization-wide initiative. So, suppose you follow through on this. Oh, and by the way, I should mention that there could be a case where you don't like the decision, and our cast on professional subordination says, you don't get to tell your people, this is a crazy idea, but we have to do it. That's not how organizations work. Suppose you follow through on the initiative, and you communicate the changes. You work through the details of it with your team. But one of your directs prefers to keep using his spreadsheets to communicate status to other parts of the organization to create and to track his budget and resources. And so he's essentially saying, I'm not going to use the new system because I'm simply more efficient with my old system. I know how to do it. Everybody else knows how to read it. And he tells you that. He says, I'm not doing it. Now, are you going to allow one of your directs to opt out?
I would hope not.
Yeah, right. Surely not. If for no other reason than you understand how organizations work now, and the CEO or whoever. Well, what's interesting about this is 99% of the people listening right now would have never allowed their direct to opt out before they understood the theory. And now you understand the principle that applies that causes you to not be able to let your direct opt out. But, you know, you understand now how organizations work, and the CEO or whomever at the top made the recommendation, which the CEO blessed, has responsibility for and authority over how the organization does resource planning and accounting. Okay. Now, if you don't like that example, let me give you another example that's a little bit more maybe comical, but principally the same exact thing. Suppose your organization uses badges to ensure security throughout the organization and to control access in parts of your facilities because they worry about theft and loss and damage and breakage, and in some cases, espionage or just compartmentalization of information in order to maintain marketplace advantage. Yet one of your directs says to you, "Hey boss, I really prefer not to wear a badge. I don't like that the company might be tracking me." "Hey dude, the company's not tracking you." "I know, but I just think that the badges may in fact be true. I know you say it's not, but it may in fact be true. Or if it's not true now, it may be true someday. And it's also hard for me to keep track of badges. I lose them all the time and I get in trouble. What I would like is to not have a badge and yet still be able to get in and out of the building every day, go where I need to go to get things done. Can you please arrange my access and movements for me at the company without me wearing a badge?" I mean, this kind of request is ludicrous. If the direct insisted and said, "No, I can't, I will not wear a badge," you'd have to probably, they'd probably have to quit or be fired for no other reason that they couldn't get into work every day. The same principle applies to both the software enterprise-wide and the badge. The organization has responsibility and authority to make decisions about ERP software and security systems like badges. Okay, those are organization-wide changes. Now let's compare that example to a smaller one. You, Mr. Ms. Manager, decide that your team is going to use a piece of software to allow deliverable tracking and status communication, separate from whatever the company does, and this is only going to apply to your team, and you've staffed it externally to your team, and they're fine. People around you whom you communicate with that need stuff from you are okay with you using it. You request the budget, your boss gets it to you, and you implement the system. And again, one of your directs refuses to adopt the system and adapt their work, personal workflows around the new software you and the rest of the team are now using. Many, many, many managers face this situation, less so, enormously, orders of magnitude less so, face the situation of the direct saying, "I'm not going to use Oracle or SAP or whatever." And they face a situation, even though they have used reasonably the role power granted them by their organization to determine the work processes and systems for their part of the organization, right? You speak for the CEO, and someone in their organization refuses to comply. Here's the nub of all of this podcast and the thing that hopefully will give you a little bit more freedom, folks. In this second example, too many managers are unaware that their role power gives them the authority to speak for the CEO. They don't know that because of how the organization is structured, because of fundamental organizational principles that apply in every company that's vertically structured, their implementation, their decision, their implementation of this bit of software carries the same weight within their team that the ERP or security protocols and badges have being implemented company-wide. That's what it means to speak for the CEO. Your direct has no less authority, ability, or rationale or traction to say to you, "No, I'm not doing it your way," just because it's a decision that only applies to you and your team, than he or she has when the company, the entire company, changes what it does or how it does it, period. That is the crux of the principle that this podcast is about in action. Now, it goes further because the manager, many managers, and to tell you the truth, there have been times when I thought, "Can I do this? Is it okay? What if he says no?" Right? Because managers don't fundamentally astound this, not all, understand this, and I'm not saying all, but a good healthy percentage don't understand the fundamental principle at work here. They mistakenly allow that direct to work outside the system. And I've talked to them and they say, yeah, I don't feel like I can force him to do it. And folks, never use the word force when it comes to role power, because you actually can't force them. You can't control somebody. Fortunately, there are consequences you can apply, which the organization gives you as a function of your being able to speak for the CEO. Managers think that you don't have the power to insist. They don't understand that they really have spoken with the authority of the entire organization, or in this case, the CEO. They don't understand that the direct's protestations are misguided and unacceptable, and frankly, not to be tolerated, even though that sounds really strong. The organization begins to break down when managers start to stop or fail to realize that they speak for the CEO and that you have been delegated that power. The CEO knows it, even though he or she never thinks it quite that way. And if you don't enforce, although there's that word force, your power, the vertical structure starts to break down. What these examples are supposed to teach us is that when you, the manager, implement some new process or system or change a workflow or plan, your plan carries the same weight among your team as the CEO having implemented that plan itself among your team directly. And folks, your organizational structure is built on these principles, and no amount of caring management or participatory management or, heaven forbid, democratic management. That's funny. I mean, that's really funny. That's like military intelligence or jumbo shrimp. You cannot justify the lack of acceptance of the new systems when you implement a change using your role power. Now, role power, there are issues associated with it, but when you implement a change using your role power, your directs have no more power to resist your small change in your team than they do to resist an organization-wide change. Full stop. When I was telling somebody a couple of weeks ago I was going to write this cast because I just had the conversation. I said, dude, I want to dedicate this to you. He says, no, don't mention my name. Because he's at one of our clients that's famous for security. One of the things that happened, he says, well, what if the direct says, and I told him as soon as he said it, I said, this is a common canard, dude. The direct says, well, but the newest system, the new change, isn't as efficient or as effective for me. Why do you want me to change when the old way for me is better? Well, first of all, the old way may in fact be better for the period of time that you're learning the new way. It, certainly. So he may be right. And certainly pre-wiring an idea among one's directs is a powerful way to eliminate problems such as this. But the directs' defense of their workflows is not a reason to allow them to refuse to adopt the new system. They may, in fact, be slightly less efficient or effective themselves in the short term, or maybe even for the medium term, or maybe even to some degree for the long term. But frequently, whether you like to admit it or not, the principle holds that is necessary to help the overall team or organization to be more effective.
Yeah. It's kind of like, imagine my brain. I'm walking down the street and there is some bad person behind me.
Yeah, can I just stop you and say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to imagine your brain.
Touche. So I got this bad guy behind me who happens to be wielding a knife. Now, I'm a martial artist, so I might actually contemplate that might be kind of fun, see what happens. But I'm going to use my smarter brain this time, and I'm going to run. And so my brain tells my legs to start running. And my right leg, dutifully, because my right leg understands that she is part of the organization called my body. But my right brain, or my left leg, has decided, nah, I kind of like walking. It's more comfortable. My leg temperature is good. Not so much. Not good for me. I'm not going to do it. Like that's probably the worst analogy ever of an organization. But there you go. I'd fall all over myself, right?
There are many, many books, and there's a school of thought around the organization as a body. And the reason for that, the reason that it makes sense, is because you'll notice that your organization is not called a mechanization. It is not a machine. It is an organization, meaning it's filled with organisms. This is why, in part, corporations have legal personhood. They are given status. as a person because of their ability to act as a unitary agent. And they act out of human impulse.
Yeah. If that's what I described is somewhat comical, but that happens to folks all the time, right? They're diseases, right?
Yeah.
Nerves don't transmit signals well, right? And in fact, the leg is not actually saying that they don't want to participate, but they're not getting the signal. Same thing.
Yeah. By the way, when the direct says, well, I'm more efficient doing it the way I'm doing it. And by the way, a lot of high C's say this just because they don't like change. And so they couch their, I don't want to change in, I'm faster and better at it using the existing system. And almost any new system you implement will be slower and less efficient and less effective when you first implement it. And that's not a reason not to change because you have to think longer term than that. But basically what we have here is, now we come into another principle, which is the principle of sub-optimization. By the record, if you don't know what sub-optimization is, and you smartly go look at Google and Wikipedia and so on, you have to be very careful here. Google searches for sub-optimization are incredibly misleading. Okay, here's what the theory of sub-optimization says for organizations. If you optimize every subpart of an organization down to and including individuals, in other words, you'd have to choose different successive layers. You can't optimize every individual and every manager and every department and so on because of the theory of sub-optimization or the principle of sub-optimization. But let's say you have a company with five divisions. If you attempt to allow the company to be optimized around the five divisions, in other words, all the subparts are optimized, then the entire company itself will become sub-optimized. If you want the company to be optimized, you have to sub-optimize each of the divisions. That's how organizations work. If you want to put it a different way, if you want to be part of a highly optimized organization, your work and productivity will have to be sub-optimized. That's the rule. It's a law, actually. Some of you have heard me call this the organization tax. We all pay for the magic of the massive productivity increases organizations make possible. So in practice, if you make a change in your team, it's as if the CEO stood right beside you and said, hey guys, you got to follow him or her because he speaks for me. We're talking about organizations here, and perhaps you as a manager could consider bringing manager tools into your organization and help you train your organization. If you're an individual manager, probably doesn't work for you, but maybe there's somebody in your organization you can talk to about deploying our training, effective manager, effective communicator, effective hiring manager more broadly in your organization. It may be a referral to somebody else. On the other hand, if you're a director, if you're a VP, you may want to reach out to Maggie at manager-tools.com and give us a chance to tell you what we do and how well we do it. There is no better management training in the world than ours. The final point, obviously, there are limits.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Remember here, we're only talking about your use of your role power. Compared to relationship power, role power is weak. A manager who has no trust with her team, who doesn't communicate and doesn't have strong relationships, will have to rely almost solely on role power. And role power loses strength the more often you have to use it. You simply are not respected or trusted, and people begin to publicly agree with you and quietly disagree. This is Manager Tools. Our entire history is built on relationship power, right? We encourage you to develop strong trust with your team members so that you can use relationship power far, far more often than your role power. If you do, you can pre-wire decisions with them. This gives you a chance to persuade them rather than command them. And there are more limits. The organization gives you the power to speak for it and the CEO, knowing that it cannot provide complete oversight to all of your decisions. It enforces the idea of oversight, even though it's not overseeing you directly. There's some trust there. It enforces that with the well-known risk that any of your bosses between you and the CEO, to include the CEO, could overrule your decision within the team. In other words, it addresses oversight with review. We're not going to watch you, but we reserve the right to review what you've done. And by the way, wouldn't that make sense that your boss could tell you, no, you can't do that with your team because your team is in her organization as well? Now, what that means is, if you want to implement this and you want to be able to implement role power changes and not have to worry about pushback, the stronger your relationship power is, the better. And because of the oversight functionality of the organization, you also have to have a good trusting relationship with your own boss. It's smart to always have a better relationship with your boss than any of your directs do. And if nothing else, you want to be communicating more with your boss than your team does. And frankly, your boss ought not to do that, but some of them do communicate with their skips and more frequently and with higher quality than they do with you, probably because of a friendship. And they ought to know better, but they're probably not listening to Manager Tools. And look, you have much less ability to create high levels of trust with your boss than you do with your team. But there are things you can do. The primary way you gain more support from your boss strategically, that means not in every particular situation, strategically have him or her support your use of role power in the team and really all power within your team, is to achieve results. The more you help your boss achieve his results, the more leeway he will grant you, reducing oversight into your team decisions, rebuffing requests from your team to overrule your role power decisions, and supporting you after the fact. On the other hand, going down a notch, the primary way you gain more support from your boss tactically for decisions with your team is proactive communication. Our guidance on pre-wiring is hugely important here. And look, even if you don't practice pre-wiring, briefing your boss fully in advance is one way to avoid your boss hearing about your new policy or system you've just rolled out using role power from someone else, one of your directs, who will have positioned it initially in his or her mind negatively rather than you doing so positively. Now, there's another organizational force that provides a form of passive oversight: human resources. Much of HR in organizations today is useful and powerful and critical to high performance. But occasionally, HR misreads their role and may be on being generous with occasionally. HR misreads their role as supporting employees rather than supporting the organization. Okay? That's not HR's job to support the employee. I know they disagree with me, but sorry, they're wrong. HR is not, despite the frequent appearance of it, statement of it, protestations of that effect, flyers and so on to that effect, the protector of employees. Management is. What that means for your role power is if a team member complains to HR, perhaps under the guise of micromanagement, perhaps my boss doesn't respect my way of doing business, I thought I would have freedom to do what I wanted here, or maybe it's just stress, I feel put upon and I don't know if I can come to work tomorrow. HR will then mistakenly take the side of the employee and come to you for resolution. When they do so, both you and they, and surely your complaining team member know, they come with relatively more organizational power than you do, because the CEO has also granted them, the organization has also granted them the right to speak for the organization. And depending upon how high a level of corporate or divisional or departmental HR you're talking about, they often are given the power of the person, the business partner whom they support. For many HR people, if you've used role power, they believe, frequently mistakenly, that they have role power to countermand your guidance. The solution here is to build a great relationship with your HR business partner in advance. I think I tweeted this several months ago. When did Noah build the ark? Before the rain. Okay. Make sure that HR knows that you use relationship power with your team long before and much more frequently and to much greater effect than you use role power. Make sure that they know that you're a manager who pre-wires her team. Make sure they know you get high levels of results and you have the support of your boss. Be responsive, on the other side of the equation, to their routine request for support. Let them know in advance of upcoming problems with employee productivity or well-being. Don't walk into HR and say, I've had enough, I got to fire this guy. Because I promise you, what you'll be going back to your buddies at your desk and saying is, HR won't let me fire it. No, that's you didn't do your job, bud. Consult with HR. Incorporate their ideas in your solutions. And don't complain about HR to your fellow managers. Folks, you have far more role power than you realize. If you do use your relationship power extensively, when you do have to use your role power, you'll find more support for it. If you've done your job right, when you need it, you have the power of your corporate CEO.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you all next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.